Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October, and then we talk about it. Today, I am joined by the co-host of the Bad Romance podcast, Jordan Searles. Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good.
What movie did you want to watch with me?
The movie was Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2 from 1987, a Canadian classic, really.
Yeah, I mean, I love Canadian filmmaking. I'm a big fan of Canadian tax shelter films. I don't know if this is one of those, but yeah, like you ever see Kathy's Curse?
No,
it's an Exorcist ripoff kind of, but it was really just made to, you know, it's like just some tax shelter money. It was good. It's really bad, but it's one of those classic movies, and I feel that. Prom Night 2 is also one of those movies. It's not, I don't know that, it certainly wasn't well received in 1987 upon its release.
Nope.
I don't know that anybody now would be so bold as to say, this is a great film.
I would.
Are you going to say it?
I would.
Is it a capital A art?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, this is really the logical conclusion of, what if Goosebumps grew up? Which is exactly, this is what I'd want for a Goosebumps movie. Not that like kitty Jack Black ship, but like this. This is what I'd want for a Goosebumps movie.
All right.
Yeah.
That's, again, a very bold statement. I think what's sort of interesting about it, or you selecting it, was originally we were going to do a different movie.
Yes.
And then you said, I'm feeling kind of down. And I need something that's going to make me feel good.
Yep.
So you chose a movie about a girl who kind of gets around, doesn't really care about other people. She's just trying to get hers.
Yep.
She gets burned to death.
Yep.
And then like 30 years later, possesses another girl and then kills a whole bunch of other people.
Yep, yep.
Just to kind of, because to kind of keep the reign of the queen going, the prom queen.
Yes.
This is a film that makes you feel good.
Yes.
Okay. So I did a previous episode with Brent Black, whose favorite movie is David Cronenberg's The Fly, and I tried to like diagnose like what it means to have that be the one where it's like, you know, like I was an insect who dreamed he was a man, but now the dream is over and the insect is awake.
Yes.
Like, that's your favorite movie? I was like, let's try and understand what your damage is. So, not that I don't value you as a human being, but let's try and, like,
I'm trying to figure out what my damage is.
Let's dig deep into the psyche. Why does Prom Night 2 make you feel good?
There's just something so delightful. Like, you could honestly rename Prom Night 2 A Ho's Revenge.
Oh, okay.
Which is something that I identify with. I identify with this. Because, like, Mary Lou is, like, kind of like a bad bitch. Like, she's just, like, she's, like, seducing the priest. She's, like, it's weird, though. She's seducing the priest. She won't fuck her boyfriend, but she's fucking this other guy like at prom, and then it's so funny because when the boyfriend finds out that they're fucking, he's just like, we've never gone that far. it's so interesting because I almost feel like the reason why is because she was like, no, I'm gonna marry this one.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm not gonna give it up to this one.
However,
so it's almost like she was trying to, like, it was like kind of like her mercy to him, but then when she gets caught, she's like, yeah, what did you expect?
Yeah. I'm just hoeing around. Like, it's not like, I guess she doesn't really keep it a secret.
No, she doesn't. Like, yeah, it was a secret before, but then when her secret comes out, like, she doesn't like freak out and she doesn't lie. She's just like, no, this is what you thought. Sorry. Nope. Not sorry. And I will say that the guy who directed this movie, well, no, not the guy who directed this. The guy who directed this movie mostly did like TV movies and a lot of like Canadian treasures. But the guy who wrote this movie, Ron Oliver, who I think is the real MVP here, did a lot of work on Goosebumps.
Oh, okay.
Yes, wrote
so
and
there was a reason for wrote the Goosebumps.
And wrote
connect.
And directed several episodes of Goosebumps. I mean, of course, Goosebumps came out after this, but you can tell his sensibilities are all over Goosebumps, because I was thinking Goosebumps the whole time I was watching it. I was like, this is Goosebumps for adults. He also writes the screenplay for Prom Night 3, which I have not seen, but I'm definitely interested.
But spoilers, brings Mary Lou Maloney back.
Yeah, this guy is such a...
She's like an ongoing slasher.
Oh my God, he wrote on Animorphs too. Like, this is the guy.
This is the guy.
Yeah. And oh, he actually directs Prom Night 3. He directs and writes Prom Night 3. So that's his passion. I got to see that one because I love this guy. I think this guy is a real... He's a real thinker.
Okay. He's really deep.
He's real deep.
So here's a fact about this. All right. So I'm like trying to break down like certain things that you really need to understand. So it's like starts in the 1950s.
Yeah, 1957. It's the prom.
There's this girl, Mary Lou, gets, you know, like Peggy Sue got married. Mary Lou got murdered.
Mary Lou, yeah, she gets caught cheating on her boyfriend.
And her boyfriend and so, sets her alight with a stink bomb.
He says that he didn't mean to kill her, and he acts genuinely surprised when she starts to die, but it's like, you threw a flammable stink bomb onto stage, like, when she wins prom. It's, I don't know. And then the stink bomb lights her on fire, and then she just, like, burns alive in front of everybody. Also, this prom is weirdly integrated, so there are, like, multiple black people there in 1957, and there are no other black people in the movie.
Yeah, you get to 1987,
and there's just
like...
nobody. It's like, it was just for appearances. But yeah, she burns alive.
All right, so that happens by a stink bomb. She gets stinked.
Yes.
A fun fact that for a time, that was like one of the longest scenes. It was the longest scene for a long time of a person being on fire on camera.
Oh, wow. Because
that's from back in the day when they actually, like, when you had to be on fire, you were on fire. Like, when they would do it for real.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so she's on camera as being on fire, whomever that stunt person is. Oh, wow. On fire for quite a spell.
MVP.
Yeah, good work. Good firework. I liked it. I was blazing. Then you fast forward, and now it's the present, and the present is the 1980s.
Yes. We got this blonde girl who's like got this strangely religious mom who like dresses and wears her hair like she's from the prairie. It's very confusing.
Yeah, and then her dad is very even tempered.
Yeah, her dad's just like totally normal, which like begs the question, what does he see in her? Like, what is there? I don't get it. And it seems like,
I don't know, is that not how your parents were? I mean that's my parents.
It's very strange.
My mom's very religious. My dad is my dad's actually not even tempered at all, but yeah. I don't know.
She wants a new dress for prom, and her dad wants to give her a new dress, but her mom's just like, no, you don't need a new dress, and who's that boy? Are you going to be riding in the sidecar of his motorcycle? Like, just being a terrible mom. And she's got these friends that's kind of just like a Degrassi episode. She's got one who really looks like, kind of like Spike if she had black hair. And there's okay.
Yeah, I think she looks like she's a really big fan of Robert Smith from The Cure, and she's just trying to look like him.
Oh yeah, probably.
She's got some, yeah, she's a Robert Smith fan. She's like, you know, like singing about how like Friday she's in love, etc.
And then there's
Mint Carr.
She's got like another friend who is also nice. They're both just nice white girls, and then she's got a nice white boyfriend and whose dad is Michael Ironside. who is really the only name in this movie.
Yeah. There's also like a bully girl who yeah. like, is she supposed to be like Latinx or something? Like, it's what is her deal?
I don't know what her deal is because she's just, it's very weird.
They vaguely suggest.
Yeah. And she, I don't know, she's, I guess she's like rich and she's just like, I'm going to wear the same dress that Elizabeth Taylor wore to the prom. So she's like rich and she's like in cahoots with this nerdy boy who's like really gross, who like tries to like bribe her with sexual favors. And there's all this, you know, wonderful
classic boys behavior in the 1980s.
You know, classic teen drama. And so she needs a dress. And her mom won't give her one. So she goes into like what seems like the costume room in the school, like from the play or something.
Yeah, like she's like in the auditorium or something.
To like grab a dress, like, to like steal a dress to wear to the prom. And when she opens up this like trunk, she unleashes Mary Lou and like a portrait from school, like it in Michael Ironside's office, because he's the principal, there's like a portrait in like cracks of like the class of 1957. And it's like, oh, she's back.
Yeah. So she kills Roberta Smith, who is pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a fun note is that like, here's this girl and like her boyfriend has ditched her, but he gave her a parting gift. A bebay.
Yeah, and she's
up the duff.
And she like dies like right after we figure out that she's pregnant too.
So it's like that's like a double death. Like so like Mary Lou is like not messing around. She like comes out the gate a double death, and one of them deaths is a bebay.
Yeah, Mary Lou is just like, she's just mad. Like, and
she just hates babies. It's my theory.
It's really interesting because like she's mad because she just wanted to fucking have a good time. So she's like this like angry spirit that's like also seems like she's trying to fuck everybody that she's killing, like fuck everybody that she's looking at and like antagonize. It's like so interesting because she just, the performance is so great because it's funny because the blonde actress who plays the girl that she possesses is like kind of like boring in the beginning, but then once she's possessed by Mary Lou, all of a sudden her performance gets really awesome.
Yep, clothes come off. a fine time is had by all. The deaths are interesting.
Yeah, yeah, the deaths
there's some good deaths.
There's a lot of variation in terms of the deaths.
But before we can talk about the deaths, I think it's very important to acknowledge what I think is the true star of this film, the horse.
That rocking horse.
So Vicky, the girl who gets possessed, ostensibly, basically an adult, she's like, you know, 17, 18 years old, we mm-hmm. assume. You know, it's her senior prom. She should be 18, right?
Yeah.
That's how old you are. I remember I'm one with the youths. I know how old you are when you're in your senior year. In her bedroom, she has a giant
white rocking horse.
With the devil's red eyes.
Yes.
Like veins on it. It's like a creepy, and the thing about it is you see it, it's possessed, but later, even when it's not possessed, it looks exactly the damn same.
It's just terrifying in general. It's very unclear as to why she has it. Maybe she's like had it since she was a child, but like it takes up so much of her room. I don't understand why she
it. Really, the only thing that suggests that it's like in possession mode is if it's got its tongue out.
Oh yeah,
when like it kind of twists its head a little bit. Its eyes move, and then a good old. Like the tongue and the phone and the Nightmare on Elm Street movie where it's like, I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
This is a little Nightmare on Elm Street-y.
Well, and by design, because Wes Craven was contacted at one point to get like advice.
Oh
like
my
how,
God.
How do we make this movie great? And he was basically like, get him in, make it like gory as shit, give him a boner, and then get him out the door. That was, and like, give him a boner was like his advice. That was like the big advice.
Oh, well, that explains why there's just like a nude scene near the end of it.
So that was not in the original script.
Oh my God.
She was not scripted as nude. She was scripted as in a towel. But nope, they're like, it's got to be full on to Taze, just have him out and bush for miles and they really do
and
it.
And there's also like a little bit of like a little bit of like fake lesbian playing where she's just like kissing her friend.
Yes.
And her friend
gets freaked out. This, yes, Vicky is possessed. This is where we're really going all around, but this is the best death scene. It is almost as good as the horse. But yeah, like, so Vicky and her friend are having a real fight. They're in a snit. And the friend doesn't know that Vicky is actually an evil ghost with unfinished business. And the unfinished business is murder.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Lou in Vicky's body takes off her clothes, gets real naked, goes into the shower with the friend, and is like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, because it's a Canadian film. I'm sorry about us fighting. And then she proceeds to just start kissing that friend on the face.
That friend's name is Monica, by the way.
So just kissing Monica on the face. And I was like, all right. I mean, this is from 1987. We're not going anywhere with this.
Yeah.
So it stops abruptly and then like starts getting creepy. And I thought that Monica was going to get it by the shower.
Yeah.
Like, I thought she was going to, like, there's a shower, there's, like, some stuff jutting out from the wall, and mm-hmm. I thought Mary Lou is just going to shove her into that shower line. Like, she's going to get impaled on the shower. That's what I was predicting.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
Nope.
No, this is almost, it's not quite Final Destination in nature, but it does kind of duck and move a little bit. So at first I was like, oh, that's going to happen. And then there's a lot of chasing. And you're like, anything could occur here. Could be, you know, like snap a neck. Who knows?
And also at some point, Mary Lou / Vicky starts singing Tutti Frutti.
Oh, yeah. A classic.
Yes.
It's a little Richard number, isn't it? Am I making that up?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Anyway, so little Richard was thrilled. He loves himself.
Oh, yeah.
So Monica hides in the locker. What's going to happen? She's going to get dragged out of that locker. But no. In something that feels very much like A Nightmare on Elm Street to me, psychically, or Carrie, which is another film of this movie, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Quite a bit. All the other lockers psychically crunch the one she's in. And then, like, a bunch of foamy blood like spills out.
It's wonderful. And also there's the womp bomb loom up before it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's a great death. I love it.
It's very classy. I'm a big fan. And they do that. There are a number of times where you're like, oh, how's this death gonna go down? The first death of the death of the pregnant girl and her and her baby child. So Jess, once again. So there's a cape, Mary Lou's cape that she doesn't really get a chance to wear, comes to life, grabs Jess, drags her to a paper cutter. So you think she's going to get decapitated by the paper cutter.
Yeah.
But wait, no.
Nope.
Then the cape pulls her up and it hangs her. And you're like, oh, wow. So she's going to get hung. But then you think she's dead. She's hanging there for a while. They cut away and you're like, okay, so she's like,
mm-hmm.
She got hung to death.
Yeah.
But wait, all of a sudden her body gets thrown out a window.
Yep.
So I guess she died from the fall?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's the movie is like, it's really, it keeps you guessing.
It really does. And it's really unclear like what she is trying, what she wants. It doesn't seem like she wants anything. She's just mad that she didn't get to live past her prom. And she's just like, fuck y'all. Y'all aren't going to live till prom either, essentially.
I think that's legit.
Yeah.
I mean, let me ask you an honest question. You die at prom. You've just been announced the prom queen. Somebody burns you to death by accident. Or I guess it doesn't matter. You've been burned to death.
Yeah.
What do you think the odds are that you are going to find a way to scrape your way out of hell and get revenge on just any old goddamn teens?
I feel like if it were me, and this is my only divergence with Mary Lou, I would only kill boys.
You know, that's just really reverse sexist of you.
Because it's like, it's boys that you're in this. Like, these girls are just trying to, you know, they're trying to do what you got to do. And I mean, I guess it depends on, like, whether or not you're more jealous of girls for getting to live or more mad at boys for being terrible. My anger is more towards boys being terrible, though. So, yeah, I would have been murdering teenage boys. I would be like, you know, after football practice, I'd be like terrorizing them or like making them see visions on the football field and, you know, stuff like that. Making them drop weights on themselves in the weight room. Anyway, I've thought about this.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't really feel off the cuff. I mean, I don't throw the term premeditated around, but when you kill a man, I'm not going to be like, out of nowhere. So uncharacteristic.
I mean, I'm going
to be like, listen, she thought it, like, oh, I'm not a snitch. Like, I'm not going to say it to anybody that matters, but like in the hushed room, and I'm going to be like, she knew what she was doing.
I just feel like they're like, where are the horror movies that are just specifically about killing off teenage boys in fun ways? Like, what are those? If one doesn't exist, I'll make it.
All right, get on it. Nobody's too stopping you. I'll be the first in line. I'm ready. Sounds good. Like, there's just so many layers.
Yeah, because it's so interesting because, like, Michael Ironside, you find out, is in a twist. Michael Ironside is the boy who threw the stink bomb and killed her. So
Now he's the principal.
And now he's the principal. So it's just like he's got all this guilt. And like the town priest is like the guy that she was cheating on him with. So it's like, and it's kind of insinuated that he became a priest because he like assumed that one day she would come back and get vengeance and he wanted protection.
Well, no, like his whole thing was basically like, well, we've both done something bad. We're both responsible for this. Like, that's a weird thing that the priest is like.
Yeah, well, I think his idea I led her down the wrong path. I should have been more responsible and not let her down the wrong path. And it's just like, you didn't, like, tell her who to fuck. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, she wanted it. At no point is it, like, a question of, there's no question of consent in this film. I will say that is one thing it's really got going for it as far as Mary Lou's concerned.
Oh yeah, Mary Lou wants sex and like she is very happy about it and like, yeah, and nothing like I'm so glad that she wasn't like attacked, and I mean she did get killed, but at least she wasn't like like assaulted or anything. I would have hated it if it was like a movie like that.
Yeah, that would be really corny. It is, I think, pretty clearly influenced by a number of other films.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm. Carrie.
Carrie and The Exorcist, which it references several times.
It
makes a bunch of allusions. There's a bit of, the priest says, I think he says the body of Christ compels you?
I think he does say that.
Which is weird because that's not the line. Like, I guess they were like, we're going to get in trouble, so just swap out the power to the body. Mm. And I was like, ooh, the body of Christ. Give me that transubstantiation. I know words. Anyway, get that Eucharist. So I think the other thing that's sort of interesting is that it wasn't really a prom night movie. So it is a sequel, quotes, to the Jamie Lee Curtis classic Prom Night, wherein a number of children accidentally do a murder.
Yep.
And then grow up. And one of the relatives of the kid who had the murder done to them is getting revenge. And you don't know that it's him. Spoilers. And also Jamie Lee Curtis does some disco dancing.
Yeah.
And that's it. And there's like a bunch of music and like they're just dancing around getting their disco on, even though by then it was like the early 1980s. They were still doing it. The Bee Gees were still out there like claiming disco from the gays like a bunch of jerks. That's the original. And then this one was not supposed to be a prom night movie. It was a completely different film with a completely different title, just like Troll 2. And then they were just like, yeah, well, it's got the same, the high school is the same name, high school. It's both got accidental murders going on. There's a prom element.
Yes.
So just call it Prom Night 2.
There's just something so fun about it. It's so silly and it's so like dumb, but it's just enjoyable. Like when she gets like sucked into the chalkboard and the chalkboard becomes like water.
Oh yeah, it's a pool. It's just a pool. They've turned the camera on its side.
Yeah, well, it's great. I love it. But then there's just like, there's also weird, quirky stuff, like the way that everyone talks is kind of strange. Like there's like a whole bunch of like random comments. It kind of reminds me of like the humor in like Grease 2 a little bit.
I mean, listen, so the movie, I guess, I mean, I don't know when it's supposed to be set, but it's set, you know, set in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
As you pointed out, there are no black people in the 1980s at this time.
No.
I'm from the 1980s, so I can confirm that that was just actually how we spoke.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's so, like, adorable and, like, quirky.
See you later, alligator. That's like, so, yeah, Mary Lou's, like, sayonara, like, when she's done killing people. She'll say that. And, like, you know what? All those people deserve to die, and here's how I know. Not a one of them said, in a wild crocodile. That's it. You know, that would have ended that haunting. She would have been out. She would have been like, ah, my business complete. And then she would have ascended to heaven. Like, that's it. She was just waiting for somebody to say in a wild crocodile. I really believe that. That's how I would have settled this whole thing. Because spoilers, they think they cracked the case, but they don't. And the reason that they don't is because they didn't give the call response see you later, alligator. Like, it's just really, I don't know, man. Like, to me, this is like simple ass arithmetic. I don't know what's wrong with them.
Yeah. I think another thing that really brought me to love this movie is that it reminded me, because I only watched it for the first time recently and then watched it the second time with you, is that it reminded me of when movies where there were a bunch of teens and their murders were actually fun and funny, because they really haven't been for like the last 10 years, like maybe even before that. Like those movies like that got very dour, and then they just kind of stayed that way, and then they lost their sense of humor. And so when I watched it, I was just like, thank you. Like, I just want this. I want this kind of stuff to come back.
It's not winky 90s humor.
Yeah.
Either it's like a very different brand.
Yeah. It's not like that meta humor, like, yes, we've seen a lot of movies. Have you seen a lot of movies kind of thing?
Yeah, like they mention Exorcist. That's about as meta commentary as it gets.
But it's like, it's just genuinely like these kids are goofy. Like, people say goofy shit. People act weird in class, and not just like weird in like a "are you seeing things, Mike?" kind of way. Like, they're weird because they're teenagers. Like, they do weird shit. They do dumb shit. There are plots that go nowhere, and I love that, actually.
Yeah, I would say, so like, two fun plots that go nowhere. One that is not really high school student related, but is good, is that like, they really want you to know that possessed Vicky is, like, up to no good. But she does something that instantly just, like, endears her to me, and I have to assume everybody. A teacher comes around. It's, like, a science teacher. He gives her some, like, weird, uncomfortable ass pats. Like, she's like, oh, I can't get my science thing to science. And he's like, oh, you gotta turn up the heat. And he, like, grabs her butt. And then, like, he goes back to his Bunsen burner, and that thing just lights up. It just lights his dick on fire. Yeah. And I was like, actual queen. Like, once again, how is your business not finished? You are the queen of the classroom. I guess that's not quite prom queen. That's classroom queen.
Yeah.
Really close. So, yeah, there's that, and then there is the issue of who is going to be the prom queen.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Which, so there's a girl who has got the money, who is maybe Latinx, but we don't really, it's never quite, they sort of suggest it in one line, then kind of throw it away, but she tries to get the nerdy guy who's running the computer to, like, she's like, I'll pay you off, like, here's $100, and she's like, I've got more, like, name your price, and he, like, writes something on a piece of paper, and she's like, no way. And then she leaves, and then she comes back at the prom, and she's like, who won? He's like, not you, bitch. And she's like, you know, and he's like, look, you know what my price is. And so she like reaches into her pocket and you think that she's going to like pull out like some like rolled up hundreds, right? Like it's going to be like a sweet grand or something, you know? But instead, she drops down on the table like some chapstick, some lip balm. And you're like, oh, shit. It's it's beach time. And that's what happens. Like he goes in and like changes who the winner is as she gives him a blowjob. And I was like, you know, that's messed up. But at the same time, once again, she just really wants to be prom queen. She's willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
She's willing to do an oral sex onto this young gentleman. They're both around the same age. I don't actually, I mean, either they're both fine, they're both within their rights, or they're both disgusting. Take your pick. But I don't think you can really, like, lay the blame on one and not the other.
Yeah, it's, yeah. And I just love these, like, teen hijinks. I really do. And actually, I was trying to think of, like, a recent horror movie that had the kind of sense of humor that I really like in this and that I kind of wish we could go back to. Because, you know, I mean, Goosebumps is corny, but at least it was like, I don't know, it wasn't so dour. It's weird. I'm in a very weird position because if a few months ago you would have told me, oh, what's a funny horror movie that you could watch now? I would say Happy Death Day. And as much as I enjoy Happy Death Day, unfortunately, the main actor, like, keeps on like retweeting like Daily Wire and other weird right wing stuff on his Twitter page.
Oh no, what a bummer.
So now I'm just like, it sucks because I love Happy Death Day, but I hate this guy. So, I mean, watch Happy Death Day. Don't look at that guy's Twitter. But yeah, Happy Death Day has a really good sense of humor that it's unfortunately marred by the people. I think there's also other creeps related to it. There are a few creeps connected to Happy Death Day, which is sad because it is funny.
Isn't it annoying that like every single thing that you like, you're like, I want to enjoy this thing, but first I've got to really sit down and like use my networking skills. Like I've got to go on the net.
Yeah.
Gotta hack it.
It's so, oh my God.
Checking out the mainframe.
Also, I'm trying to think of another scene in a horror movie that was actually like funny. I saw Mandy recently.
Oh, Nicolas Cage's Mandy?
Yes. Have you seen Mandy?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay. There's like a scene with like a random commercial that's not part of the plot at all. Can I tell you about the commercial or would it ruin it for you?
No, don't ruin it. Don't ruin it. That's not this podcast.
Okay. There's like a fake commercial that's really funny in Mandy.
Here's what I'm going to do. You've recommended, this is always how we do it. You just kind of like slid right in. I was going to prep it, but then you were like, I'm just going to dive right in. We do always recommend movies. So your movie recommendation would be?
I don't know.
Are you saying it would be Happy Death Day?
See, I feel hard. It's so fun, but then the things and the reveal so good. I don't know. I'm like 50-50 on you should see Happy Death Day. 50-50 on it. What about you? What's yours?
Unquestionably, I think that this movie evokes the rare example of a fun woman slasher. And they are very rare, I find, in horror of this type. Where
and there
like,
should be more of them.
Where they're like unrepentant. And so I would say my recommendation is Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3. What? Not the first one. I mean, the first one is great, but the first one is like Angela Baker is a boy who is forced to be a girl. And it's weird and it's problematic. But in 2 and 3... when she's played by Pam Springsteen, related to Bruce Springsteen, the boss.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, like they basically just at some point say like she got, you know, quote, the operation. And I'm like, well, she got like, quote, the operation. Then clearly she's trans and she wanted to be a woman the whole time. And like, I just always assume after that her beef is just like, all these cis people like kind of like put it in her face, all like the easy ways that they could be sexy and do whatever they wanted. And she's just like, wow, screw these people. Like they were always mean to me. They made my life really hard. So you know what? I'm just going to start murdering cis teenagers.
Oh my God. Okay.
And,
okay.
And if you view it from that angle, it is a trans feminist masterpiece.
Okay.
In both films. And if like, I mean, honestly, legitimately, some of the best deaths in any horror movie ever.
Okay. I'm really excited. I'm definitely going to watch them like soon.
Yeah. Definitely hop on those. Yeah. Sleepaway Camps 2 and 3. Unquestionably would be the ones I'd like if you're going to watch. And I guess also if you want to watch Prom Night 3, which continues the story of Mary Lou.
Mm-hmm.
She does keep going. So yeah, now I want to make a movie where it's like Mary Lou versus Angela Baker.
Oh my God, I would love that.
They need to, like, I think they did remake a Prom Night movie, but I assume they remade, like, the original.
Yeah, it's not fun. I saw
not
it in
the way
the
to
theater.
Do it. You should remake this one.
Oh yeah, that would be so fun.
Yeah, and then remake the Sleepaway Camp movies, but using my edict, a modern masterpiece where a young trans teenager gets her revenge. It's a great revenge movie against like cisgender people that are like bad. Like it's like a bunch of like turfy teens.
Oh my God.
Get their comeuppance at a sleepaway camp.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it. That's great. That's
anyway,
great. Yes.
All right. So I'm going to call it. That's our podcast. Before we go, Jordan, can you please tell people where they can find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at JOURDAYEN. And I'm on Instagram under the same name, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bad Romance Podcast, on all the platforms, including Spotify. I'm around. I do comedy. I write. You can see my writing on Bitch Media. I've written some pieces for them. So, yeah.
Dope. All right. And you can find me, Danny Roth. I'm on sci-fi.com pretty much all day long. A little bit every day doing videos. And three podcasts for them. And then a fourth podcast.
Ooh.
Called Song Versus Song with Todd Nathanson. So if you're like seeking out a good music podcast, but mostly I'm on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find me there at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. Thank you for listening. And remember, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror. See you next time.